Hi, everyone. I'm Matt Grenler.
And I'm Laura Grenler. And today on K-12 Art Chat, we're joined by Jennifer Ferrari and Abby Pato-Bay, experts in teaching artistic behavior and host of the podcast Tab Storytellers. And you guessed it, we're diving into the topic of tab today.
All right. Well,
I've been wanting to have these two wonderful, amazing people on this podcast for a long time. I feel like I met one of them at an NAEA conference years ago, and I've heard amazing things about both of them, and they have so much knowledge to share. So we have Abby Pato-Bay and Jen Ferrari from Storytellers, Tab Storytellers, and they're going to talk to us all about all things tab today. I think we have some deep probing questions that we want to know your thoughts about, because this
well,
could be
hold on. We need to back it up just a little bit, because I'm sure that we have some people that really want to know who these people are. So if either one of you would like to go first, you could rock paper scissors for it. But if you could just tell our listeners a little bit about you all and your art story, if you will.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I'll go first. So hi, everybody. My name is Jen Ferrari. Let's see a little bit about me. So, well, I was born and raised in Massachusetts, and my partner, Brennan, and I have two young boys. One is 8, one is 6. So we're in the thick of it right now.
Oh, yes.
And yes. And so, well, we met at UMass Amherst in the marching band, but that's where I first formally studied art. Before that, I was interested in it. I had taken, classes, but I never really had a formal art education. I had like some classes here and there in school, but nothing that really stuck with me. So college is where I first got into it. And I've loved it since I was a kid. And I always wanted to be a Disney animator. That was my like passion when I was 5, 6 years old. And I grew up in the golden age of Disney animation. So I was always enthralled with the process of everything, how it was created, the story through drawing and art. It was just amazing to me. And then in college, I realized that my passion for making art was something I wanted to share with other people. And that's why I went into teaching. And there's something about, helping other people find what drives like their creative spirit that makes my job as an art teacher so enjoyable and my dream job. So art making for me has always been very like time and place specific. So when I think about like my art that I make, I dabble in so many different art forms depending on what materials are available or what I'm inspired by. But lately I've been using nature both as a subject and a medium. And I also enjoy exploring the science of memory, because my memory, as Abby knows, it goes in and out, and that's why I have to write everything down, because if I don't write it down, I might not remember. So I take pictures of everything also so I can remember, and that's how I make a lot of my art now. So it's just a little bit about me and my art journey and my teaching. So
that's awesome.
I'll turn it over to you now, Abby.
Yeah, Jen and I are like completely different.
Which is why we're so great together.
Like two halves make a whole. Mm-hmm. So I'm Abby Pato-Bay, and I'm in a transition. I am still struggling with saying that I'm from Wyoming, because now I'm moved to Colorado like last week. So this is like a big summer of change for me. I also have been an art teacher, K-12 in public schools. Well, I was private school for 2 years at the very beginning, and then 16 years in public schools, K-6, K-12, middle schools where I ended. And I'm just, again, transitioning into higher ed. And so I'll be at the University of Northern Colorado in Greeley. And so hence the move from Wyoming to Greeley. I'm starting to have an art practice again. it's been a minute. I am definitely a mixed media artist. I like a lot of fibers. I also work with bones and skulls and silk. And I have, I have two wonderful children who they'll be home from their dad soon. So it'll be good. They'll get to move. They left one house and they'll come back to a whole different house that hopefully will have beds in it by the time they get here. It's good. I'm Jen and I started this podcast, Tab Storytellers, because we are both in the Tab community, and we got voluntold to do like a blog kind of thing. And we tried, we were going to just kind of like, it was going to be like a vetted blog where people could submit their stories and things, because we wanted to hear from people in the field and from people who are, you know, influenced or connected. And after a year of meeting every month, and the only two blog entries that we had were our two that we put through this site, we were like, well, this is not working, but we still love meeting every month because we have a great time. So we should just keep meeting every month and have a podcast. And so that's why Tab Storytellers became a podcast instead of our very short-lived blog. Yeah, and so that's...
Well, and it was... Yeah. Well, it was so important, too, because when we, like, were thinking about it, I don't even remember who brought it up, but we were saying, you know, storytelling has a place, like, in written form, but also it's very narrative when you're telling the story, too. And there's this oral tradition of storytelling, so why not be storytellers, where we actually are telling our stories? So I'm actually really happy that it went off in that direction, because I love listening to everyone's story. We have all kinds of guests on the show that are, you know, very familiar with Tab, practice Tab, familiar with it, research it. So it's really a great forum for people to get together and chat.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things where like storytelling and Tab actually become part of my path. I finished my PhD and my focus was on the history of Tab. And so I've written the history of Tab and interviewed, I had 20 people that I interviewed, all four founders, most of the next level leaders, I think 14 really influential people on Tab, as well as a couple of critics and some people who've influenced Tab in its very origins. And so I got to meet a lot of great people. I've listened to the stories of how Tab started, and it created space for me in my own practice and has given me more understanding of art education as a whole in the history of education, and then how Tab education has kind of, I mean, Tab art has kind of come in and to its own place inside of education history. So it's been kind of fun. So I also graduated a PhD this year. So it's been a big year.
It's been a huge year.
Yes.
I'm curious too, Abby, is there anywhere, I mean, you might not want to share, but you worked really hard on it. Is there somewhere we could read this history of Tab? I mean, your dissertation, like, is it published somewhere?
It is. I did not put that in the resources, but I will add it to that. I paid for it to be free. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, you can make people pay for this. And I was like, no, that's not the spirit of Tab. So I could pay like $75 up front and make it free for everybody forever. And so it's like 225 pages. But if people want to read the actual story of Tab, it's chapter 4. Kind of thing. There's jargony stuff, but apparently it's very much a narrative. So I've had some people say, I just sat down and read the whole thing. And I was like, really? Because I'm not sure I would do that. And I wrote it.
I want to read it. I mean, I'm curious about it. Because I mean, we're going to talk here in a second about like, what is Tab? But you know, I'm curious where it stemmed from. Like, what was chapter four.
And so chapter 2 is like how it sits in the history, because that's part of the literature review. And then chapter 4 is the stories themselves. That's the data part. So, yeah. There you go, people. That's your cheat sheet, how to read a dissertation. If you want all my opinion, that's chapter 5. So,
Jen, what were you going to say? Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say that before this dissertation work that Abby did, there wasn't really a documented story of or a history of Tab and what it is, and like a formal definition that has encompassed like all of these different stories of all these different people that had like a part in the, you know, the creation of it. So it really is going to be, I think, a critical, important document for people, especially if they would like to find out more. I mean, this is full of narrative stories, but it also has a lot of research and other things in there in it as well. So this will, I think, be a very important document to have moving forward. So thank you, Abby, for putting it together.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. I mean, 8 years.
How many years did it take
to get that PhD?
Just saying that my K PhD career may have spanned 29 years. I graduated grade 29.
That's awesome.
All right.
Well, okay. This is kind of a, since I sent you the original show notes, I adjusted this question and now it's, it went from being a question to a three-part question. Oh, I apologize. I have a habit of doing this. Yes. So first of all, and I'm just going to say, whoever wants to answer whichever part of this, go for it. But here's my three-part question. What is TAB? Like, you know, I think if there's a listener out there that's just not familiar with TAB, you know, I know it's teaching artistic behavior. I've done some research in it, but I know that when I talk to other teachers, there are still people that are unfamiliar with it. So number one, what is TAB? Number two, is there a difference between TAB and choice? And then number three, for both of you, what was the spark that had you dive into TAB as your chosen pedagogy?
Jen, do you want me to start with this one?
I was going to say, I would like Abby to start because one of the things that she did was she came up with a formal definition of what TAB is. So I'm going to hand that one to you and then we can tackle
that. I did write a formal definition. That was part of the research that I did, was asking all of the people that I interviewed what their definition of TAB was. And so you would think that the four founders of TAB or people who had practiced it for years would have a similar definition. And it was very interesting that nobody actually did have the same definition of what TAB is. And not being prepared, I did not pull up from my actual written statement, okay, like my official paragraph of what I think TAB is. I mean, you'll hear the three pillars or the three, three sentence curriculum, although it's not really a curriculum. It is, the child is the very heart of what TAB is. It is centered around the child as the artist. The classroom is a studio and you explore what do artists do. And that last one, what do artists do, can be interpreted a couple different ways. I had taken it to be like, let's look at what other artists do kind of thing and learn from them. And the more that I leaned into the history of it, I think that was originally more of like, let's look at what kids are doing. They're the artist. What are they doing? Let's do those things. And so, I mean, that's a kind of interesting thing that I found. But really, the other part that is not ever really explicitly said is really what does that do to the role of the teacher as well? So if you are going to change the pedagogy, and TAB really is multi-level. So it's, I mean, it's simple, it's three sentences, but also it's very complicated and layered. And so it is like a pedagogy. So that's the practice that happens in the classroom, but also it can be really the belief structure for why you do what you do. And so it is, some people are like, oh, everybody should do TAB or everybody should be choice. And that's, those are, well, TAB and choice are different things now. I think they were synonymous in the past. But that is one of those things where it's a process to come, like to believe those things and then act on those things. And so that's part of what, that's why there's a TAB community. That's why we support each other, because what that looks like is different for every person in every classroom with every class that they have. Those aren't going to be the same. Even if you're the same teacher and you move to a different school, you're going to do it differently. Mm-hmm. And so TAB is something that changes and is very reactive to the context that it happens in. And so it will always look different. And I think that is a struggle for some people to wrap their head around. I think it's, people are like, I want it to be a thing that I can just, this is how you do it, this is how I'll do the same thing. And people ask all the time, what does it look like in your classroom? Well, but this is like my sink's on the left and your sink's on the right. That will literally change how, which direction you know, things had change. And so I think that that's, I think that's why both the beauty and the frustration with what TAB is. Mm-hmm. Jen, do you want to talk about
it? Yeah, well, I was first going to add that I'm glad Abby brought up that the definition that she created was an amalgamation of like all these different things, because even the four founders couldn't agree, but they all came up with a different version of it. And I think that's really important, because that's what is beautiful about TAB, is that even though there's those three pillars of the child's the artist, the classroom is the studio, and we ask the question, what do artists do to guide what we do? it's different for everybody. And as Abby was saying, depending on your situation, your environment, your standards that you're following, your expectations from administration, your studio space, your kids, like there's so many things that are very variable that everybody is doing something so different from one another. And that's one of the things that Abby was mentioning that I found when people are looking for like, well, how do I do this? You know, how do I, and there are books out there that people can go to for examples of how it has been done. But I think that the beautiful thing about TAB, and especially moving forward, is that it continues to morph and to change and to incorporate all of these other modes of learning that are centering the child in that art education. So one of the things that I think, Lori, you had asked about was how TAB and choice are different. Mm-hmm. And the way I think about it, and I've talked to other people who have kind of tried to understand, is that TAB is the pedagogy that facilitates and maximizes student choice in the art room. So it's a pedagogy. It's not like a methodology. It's not like you do this, 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 and this. It's just a way of thinking, a philosophy. And it, for elementary, because I'm an elementary teacher, I came from high school, but now I teach elementary. It's very centers focused for a lot of people at the elementary level. Once you get to high school, it becomes very single media in a lot of the different courses that are offered. So, you know, when you change from that environment where it's more like foundational, where you try a bunch of different things, into the more advanced, where now you're looking at like a specific type of media or one medium, like take ceramics, for example. And then you're looking at skills, but then applying it to a way that the kids are thinking about like the ideas. So it's a lot about also developing original ideation. And that's what I love about it. Because when I was a high school teacher, that was the one thing I always got from my kids. Because when I taught high school, it was before I had for myself discovered TAB. And my kids were always after they had finished a project saying, well, Mrs. Ferrari, I'm all done. And I said, oh, well, that's great. Well, now you have some time. And, you know, I used to think about them as early finishers, as many people do. And they would say, I would ask them, what do you want to do? And they would say, well, I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't think of anything. And I would say, what do you mean you can't think of anything? You have like all this space and time now. And they were like, no, I can't think of anything. And I realized I was telling them what to do all the time. And I needed to stop because I clearly was not helping them. So that was my like, oh my God, something's wrong. And why I decided to move to elementary, because I wanted to try to help kids to form that ideation earlier so they could hold on to it later. So that's just, I kind of got a little off topic. I apologize. But
no, actually, in my mind,
it was related.
No, it is related because what that spark for diving into TAB is the chosen pedagogy. I mean, you really just explained it. And excuse me, all I could think of was that was something as a supervisor of art teachers, I heard a lot for a long time was, you know, these high school kids just can't make decisions. They can't ideate. They can't, you know, choose where they're going to take their art. You know, they aren't acting as the artist. They're not working through a process. They're just, they want to know what box to check next on the rubric to get a good grade. And one of the things that I think I appreciate about the College Board moving to a sustained investigation and even IB's process that they use is that it's really driven by the student and their own exploration, right? And I think that you nailed it, is that we've got to start that process of exploration and decision-making and being able to make choices at a much earlier age so that when they grow up, they can ideate, they can take that deep dive, because it's really hard for them. You know, I think when you're talking about the studio habits of mind, and they have a hard time envisioning and they have a hard time with that persistence. And I think that that's something I appreciate about TAB, especially when I see it done really well at an early age.
Well, that's another thing that what you were just saying, Laura, about persistence and engagement. I've noticed at my level, so I teach grades 3, 4, and 5, and the third graders, they come in, they're ready. They're like, oh my gosh, I got an idea. Mm-hmm. I'm all set. They're still at that age where it's natural for them to think that way. As they get to fourth, they're still sort of there. But once they turn that into fifth, it starts to become mm-hmm. more about the peers, the socialization, the, all of mm-hmm. that. So then they start to question more of themselves. So I found in my own experience that this has helped kids to keep more of that growth mindset, where if they are following and pursuing things that they feel passionate about and I'm there to support them, they're able to keep that growth mindset where they can think more positively and persist mm-hmm. into their later explorations. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that's something that I think about often myself, but I don't often think to say if I'm not like, oh my gosh, you're right.
So I'm gonna back up just a little bit, because I, like Jen was talking a lot about the pedagogy, like the belief structure of what TAB is, like that really guides us as the practitioner. But choice movement has, like, there was a distinction when the choice interest group was created in AEA.
Yep.
And I was in the room when that happened, when that tried to happen the first year, and then when it did happen the next year, I was there for that. I wrote that into this background if you want to know more about all of the specifics of how that occurred. But it became like a turning point for the language change. And it was like at that point, people could go like, oh, well, I'm a choice teacher, but I don't identify as a TAB teacher. And so choice, I think a lot of times there's been several different iterations of what's called the choice continuum. John Crow had one. Diane Jaquith has had several. There's a guy in Colorado, Tom Burkle, who created one almost simultaneously with, Diane. So there's been several iterations of these continuums of choice, but essentially teacher directed is on one side and student directed is on the other. And then you can be in towards the middle where you're kind of like co-making decisions, or student, there's a balance of who's making this, you know, who the decisions kind of thing. And mm-hmm. through the research around you, like what is, when you say I'm TAB, because there was some language for a while, it's like I'm TAB-ish, or I'm, you know, and mm-hmm. so we've moved away from that, where TAB is kind of one of those things where if it's guiding your belief structure, you're probably going to be TAB philosophy or not, and it's okay to be not. I mean, I want to say that. Mm-hmm. I guess I feel like I need to say that. It is okay if TAB is not your pedagogy. If choice is not, there are some people who the core of who they are as a human and an educator are not that. And I feel like that there's a judgment mm-hmm. that comes out of the TAB community, that people feel judged if they're not choice. And I just want to say, it is okay if that is not your path. It is not everyone's. Mm-hmm. You need to know yourself and your students and your administration and your context. And I have been in schools where it is harder to be a TAB teacher than others, and it is okay to keep your job. So I just want to put that out there mm-hmm. because I feel like people really need the permission. Yeah. No, it's okay that it's not for them. But if you decide you like that continuum is a place to say, all right, these are the where I'm taking control. These are where the students are taking control. And then, you know, and I think there's, again, when we talk about a continuum of student directed, there's this idea that you have to go all the way over to student directed. And that's also not true. Like, mm-hmm. yeah. I want the students to be the artist, but that I've had students who need a lot of scaffolding to make that transition to be the artist. Mm-hmm. And that, so them being the artist in my classroom might not happen the first time they're in my classroom, the first semester they're in my classroom, or the second, hopefully by the time I have eighth graders. But it's a time, and there's some kids who just want more support or need more support, or the makeup of the class needs more support. And that's one of those things where I don't think the role of the teacher has been addressed as well as it could be, in that you have permission to tab your own way. Like, we're saying, like, let's let these kids be artists. And I'm like, let's let the teachers also be the TAB teachers, where you get to make a decision. Yeah. I mean, Diane Jaquith at one point had mentioned, like, she had, you know, all, like, she was doing a lot of TAB, and there was one class that came through, and she's like, I'm going to have a little more control. And I was like, oh, if one of the founders can have more control of one class, I can have more control of, you know, like, and so it's one of those things where and I keep talking about these four founders, so people know. John Crow, it was Kathy Douglas first, mm-hmm. who then found John Crow, and they met Pauline Joseph, and then Diane Jaquith came in last. And so that's the sequence, and those are the people we consider the four founders. But yeah, so that's where that, like, so TAB is philosophy and pedagogy, and choice is the methodology, and that's the how you mm-hmm. implement it in the classroom is how we define, that's how Jen and I have defined it. As we talk with, and so, yeah. And so I mean, I don't know, Matt, were you going to say something?
I was actually, because that started to lead into one of our next questions. You know, you talked about TAB and non-TAB, and there is a sticky kind of area between, you know, are you this or are you that, with the camps of, you know, TAB and non-TAB. You know, do it when you're leaning more towards the traditional skills, or you're talking about full choice and or TAB. You know, so is there a, you started to talk about it. Is there a middle ground, or is there, because they get so divided.
And why is it so divided?
So
I have so many thoughts on that. Part of this is going to be like my background story. So the way I found TAB was that I had been an elementary teacher for a while, and I was in a district who had decided the elements and principles were going to be the way that we guided our work. And so I was so excited that I was going to knock out like all of these elements and principles at once with these, like, I think they were kindergartners or second graders. There was a teacher that taught both kindergarten and second grade, so I'm a little muddy on which one it was, because it was her that told me this. And we had done like wavy lines. It must have been kindergarten, wavy lines with cool color, so blue background, and then we done like organic shape, leaf prints, and warm colors, and they all looked identical, and the kids couldn't tell what they were, and the teacher fell in love with how beautiful they were, and my heart broke. And at that point, I went to the Colorado Art Education Association conference in Breckenridge that year, which, by the way, is a great conference, and anybody in the region, you should definitely go. But I went to one of my friends, Dale Zalmstra, and I was like, if this is what art teaching is, I quit. There has to be a better way. And she's one of the, like, she's one of the people that really came in behind the founders and picked TAB up for the Colorado people and led it. And so she was like, no, there is a better way. And so I was like, I left that weekend and I was like, I'm going to be a TAB teacher. I didn't read the book and I didn't do the research. And I just opened up the cabinets when I got back and I was like, hey, let's do things different. And I crashed and burned so bad. Like I burned this. And so it was bad. And so it was so bad that I, for the remainder of that year from like second semester, I may have had to have a lesson plan that connected with a literary book and meet with the principal every Thursday morning at 7:30. And maybe that was posted on the staff agenda for the entire staff to know that we were meeting every Thursday morning.
No.
She was a little petty. It was brutal. So, I mean, I learned hard that maybe there's better ways to enter into new ways of doing things in the classroom. And so I backed off and I became more of a modified choice educator. And I think I burned so hard. There's some scars there that have created some space where I stay a little more in the middle. And I call it the muddy middle because it is muddy. But I do a lot of scaffolding. And supports and guidance. But I believe that this, you know, like my belief is still this, the children are the artists. And I believe mm-hmm. that my classroom is a space that is their studio. And we explore what do artists do. And we explore what do they do as themselves through critique and reflection. And we explore what other artists do and how we can like look at that. And I am creating I think of it like sometimes like I am letting them loose in a giant field with a fence. And if they bump into the fence, great, that there's a fence there for a reason. And they were like, but I don't like the fence here. And we can have a conversation like, what about the fence do you not like? And I was like, oh, you know what? Sure, you have a really great reason that this fence is in your way. Let's open the gate and you can go into the next field. But the rest of everybody's probably not ready to just head in that field with you. So let's make that choice on an individual basis. And so it's letting kids, having that kind of gradual release as they're ready, especially like when I taught middle school, that was a really big part of it. And so there's that muddiness And I think that that's, it is kind of how that is. And then you asked about, like, why has there been that divide historically? Mm-hmm. And I think part of it was, is for a long time, the only way you knew about TAB was you had probably gone to NAEA mm-hmm. and seen a work conference workshop, like early 2000s, or you found the Yahoo group. And so several people mm-hmm. that I've interviewed were like, I found the Yahoo group. And I spent the whole summer reading every post from the very first post all the way through all 5,000 posts. And they read all the threads in this discussion group. And that was the way you had to educate yourself. And then you had to find the people who developed blogs and read the blogs. I mean, because the book didn't show up until like 2009. So this is like 7 years of like the wilderness of TAB. And so when people found it, they're like, no, I found it. Like, I found it and I'm owning it. And this is the way it is. And I think that a lot of times, I think like maybe sometimes religion, and I think sometimes people say it like TAB's cult, but like if you think about somebody who like recently converted to a religion and they're really passionate about it and that's the way to go. And there's some people like, no, I've heard of that. That's great. You know, like I could be on board, but I'm not sure I'm going to do it as enthusiastically as you. There's some dogma that happens when somebody finds something that's really exciting and they want everybody else to know how exciting it is. At the same time, it's a journey and not everybody enters at the same point and is going the same pace. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of it is people want, you know, I have a friend, one of my best friends, also named Jen, always harasses me about being a slow walker. Like I'm always walking slow and she walks fast. And so like we have jokes about like how much I drive her crazy that we are going in the same place and we're heading the same direction with the same purpose and we'll get there at two different times. And I think that that's very much what TAB is that we want kids to be the artist. We want them to use our classrooms as a studio. We're exploring what artists do and how that looks is a different journey for everybody. And not everybody has that awareness of where everybody else is at.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. I like that last part about, you know, people moving towards the same objective, but potentially like in a different way or like at different paces. I didn't have a lot to add, but what I wanted to, I think, focus on most was the question about, you know, there being traditional skills-based art educators and then TAB all the way. And I think that's one of the big misconceptions of TAB is that there's not skills really involved in it. But as Abby was saying, the choice is a continuum. And for me personally, as a TAB teacher, I do teach a lot of skill in my program, in my curriculum, but it's very applicable to in the moment, the emergent like need of the child in the moment. Mm-hmm. And that looks very different depending on the different kids. And one of the things that I recently wrote about that I think is being published this past July, like this July that we just ended in art education, is about how teaching has always been akin to performance. Like a type of performance, but rather than thinking about it as a scripted performance, I think about it more as improvisation. And I don't mean that in that you are making it up as you go. Like that's not the type of improvisation I mean. Like the actual art form of improvisation is very regimented if you actually study it. Viola Spolin has written books and books and books as the creator of the improvisational art form. And when you really get down to it, there is a lot of front loading that goes into all the things that you see being spontaneously done on the spot. So I think TAB teachers, among all the different teachers I've ever met, have that knowledge that's like in their brain that they can just like pull out like any moment that they need it, whether it's a skill or an artist or a technique or a medium, and then they're able to help the kid apply it in the moment. And that's one of the most important differences, I think, between like what I used to do and what I do now, is that my kids are able to apply the skills they learn independently of whatever the project. So like, for example, when Abby was doing the beautiful leaves with the warm and the whatever colors, those kids were learning skills that they were applying at that moment because she told them about it. But for them to apply it independently afterwards and say, I'm going to use warm colors because I feel warm and I already want it to look warm or it's fall, or that's another totally different thing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's that application of that learned, you know, material later, like, does it stick with them? And that's always something I've been curious about. And I've noticed that when the kids are actually engaged in like the authenticity of it, they tend to remember it more and then apply it later. So that was another really big difference for me, is that there is a lot of skill, but it's just very in the moment type stuff, if that makes sense.
No, I fully appreciate that, because that's something I want to hit on in our next question, because that is one thing as a supervisor. How do I say this? So I was never anti-TAB. In fact, I was very much for TAB, but TAB done well, TAB done with research, TAB done with understanding and knowing their why and the how, and really thinking it through, right? Like, I think just what you said about that front loading is like, how are you going to have all those pieces in place, right? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think some art supervisors or principals have seen teachers just like throw out all the stuff in the closet and say, go for it. And that's not what TAB is. And so then it gets a bad rap. And
mm-hmm. No, I mean, I was that teacher once, and it does. I'll own it.
Okay. Well, that wasn't directed at you at all, Abby.
No.
When I was doing a lot of my research, when I asked, I mean, I had, there's like 14 questions that I asked everybody. And one of them was like, what is TAB? And then like, sometimes you learn about what something is by what it's not. And so mm-hmm. I followed it like, what is not TAB? And it was amazing how many people described TAB by what it's not. And like, laissez-faire is not what it is. And teachers mm-hmm. were letting, you know, but also teachers like, and it was amazing how many times it was the job of the teacher that described what TAB is and isn't. And so, yeah, no, it's a huge, huge thing. Mm-hmm. It's a big area. It's messy.
I mean, I really appreciate you bringing that forward too, Jen, though, because that is, and Abby, because that's, I think, part of the crux of the like different camps, if you will. And mm-hmm. TAB does have skill involved in it. It does teach skills. It does, you know, grow the child. And I love that at the heart of the number one pillar is it's child centered, right? It's artist centered. Mm. That's, you know, I was really for go slow with the teachers that I worked with and take your time and learn about it and connect with others instead of just diving in wholeheartedly on your own, is like, find that community. But that's, mm-hmm. that's my own thought on it. But
because I think that very much, you know, the days of saying like, I don't have anybody else in my building who does art, or I don't like that, like we're a silo instead of like, we are not anymore. Mm-hmm. You choosing to be isolated is a choice. Yes. Like post-COVID, everything is digital. Mm-hmm. Our digital communities, if we can teach kids digitally, we can be community digitally. And so there's no excuse for not being connected to other people. And I think that mm-hmm. Reflective practice is one of the most important things that you can do as an educator. And there's that, like, you know, I learned, like I did not do things well. I changed how I did them and was more thoughtful and moving forward and became more intentional with my practice, and it benefited my students. And it's one of those things where it's important to be aware of, is this working? Is this not? You know, what skills, you still have a scope and sequence of things that you're teaching. It's not that you're not teaching. There are things that you do have to cover for your standards, for your curriculum, for your you're still teaching those things. You are still the expert in the room. I still have a degree's worth of knowledge my students do not have. It does not mean that I'm going to put it, I'm not going to be the owner of all of the knowledge in the room, but I'm going to say, I have expertise in this, and I'm going to probably help guide you or offer you multiple solutions that you can choose some of, but also at the end of the day, this is my job, and we're going to have some ways of working in this space together. And also, this is a communal space. Right. You know, there are lots of things that have to get put into place and how these things work. But also, I think the idea that you just, and I, this is where I did not do my research, this, that you just let everything loose or that skills are taught. I think there's a lot of people that I've interviewed, but even Diane Jacobs is like, being a tap teacher is the hardest way to teach. So if you go in and going, I'm going to be a tap teacher, seems really easy. It is not. And I think there's some things like indicators that I've thought about that would be like, if you want to know if you're doing tab well, like self-checks, or if you're an administrator and you're like, if I'm doing tab well, I should have a really good idea of where every student is. Like, because I've been interacting with them and know what they're working on. And that can be a lot if you have a lot of students.
Yeah.
Like, I should have a good awareness of who's using what materials. And that's not always my strength. So that's like, what is the documentation that's happening? How are you documenting progress? How are students documenting progress? There's some things that happen in TAB. If we are process oriented, how are you ensuring those processes are happening? You know, are you reflecting on that? Are you just, you know, just assuming it's happening? I think there's some things where if we ask ourselves, because we are in an evidence-based world these days. Yep. So what is the evidence of your practice? You know,
if it's going back to what you just said, Abby, about living in a digital world, especially post-COVID, like all of our students in our school district, you know, at least from second grade up in art, have a digital portfolio where they're taking process photos and they're writing little sentences about where they are in their artwork. And, you know, they're reflecting on their process. Right. And I know that, maybe that sounds hard, especially if it's 600 or 700 students, because some of our teachers at the elementary school have upwards of 900 students. And so that is very challenging. And I think to your point too, TAB is not for the faint-hearted. Like it's, it is hard, but it's so, I mean, when I've seen it, that I've just seen it done so magically. I don't know if that's a good word or not, but just to see the joy that a child has in creating something that is 100% theirs is amazing. Mm-hmm. But to that point that you're making about assessment, I'd like to ask both of you, or I don't know which one wants to jump in on this, but if you were to give some advice to a teacher that is worried about, you know, starting TAB and how is that assessment going to look in a TAB classroom, especially where a student, and maybe Jen, this is more for you in a high school, thinking high school, but like if the students and the parents and the administrators are used to seeing like a very check the box skill-based rubric, how do you move away from that to these individual assessments if they're all doing something more individually based?
Right. Yeah. Did you want to start? Go ahead.
Yeah. In middle school, I was part of a team and a very product oriented partner who will never identify as TAB, and that's, we've both agreed that that's definitely best for him, and he's a great teacher and kids make amazing things in his class, and he's moved into more student choice, but at the end of the day we were supposed to be doing a common assessment and it was like we are opposite ends of how this works, and we came to an agreement that, you know, what we're focused on and we're assessing is our standards language, because a lot of state standards are based off of national standards, which are pretty open, but one, you need to be hitting standards in wherever you're teaching, like, so you know how, and that's, I mean, that's where I always take assessments honestly, is to the standards, because that's at the end of the day where you should be documenting what you're doing. And a lot of the standards don't dictate a material or a skill. So how can you, you know, where are you creating space in your program for students to make the choices and have those things inside of that? Now that framework might look different. A lot of TAB folks will use studio habits as a way of checking in and seeing progress and growth. I think a lot of it is, conversations and conferring with students and documentation that way, like they're being reflective on their own processes. Jen, what about you?
Yeah. Okay. So this might sound crazy. All right. But I actually love assessment. I'm very passionate about it. And I think part of that for me is because I realize the importance of what we do as art teachers for our kids. As an elementary teacher right now, I see 600 kids every year, and only a handful of them are going to become like what the world thinks of as like a professional working artist, mm-hmm. right? Yep. All the other 595 or whatever are going to go off and do these other amazing things and these amazing career paths. But all of them are going to need the skills that we build in an art program, the creativity, the envisioning, like we talked about earlier, engaging and persisting, expressing themselves, reflection, all of these things, those studio habits are things that they're going to use. So when I realized that, I realized that I can assess the quality of their artistic thinking, basically. And I think a lot of art teachers are initially thinking, well, if I did want to move to tab and choice, like what would I be assessing if they're all doing something different? And it's that quality of their artistic thought that I think is what you could be assessed. That's what I look at. And for them, it helps them to also like move forward in other aspects of their life. So there's a few different ways you could go about doing it, but most process-based art programs, when you're looking at artistic thinking, you can look at either some form of artistic thinking process. So like Kathy Douglas created I Can statements for the elementary level, which can be made available. I think they're available on the TAB website, but if anyone was curious, you could probably Google them too. But then there's also Melissa Purdy's artistic thinking process. Mm-hmm. And that's at the high school level. And both of those look at basically what artists are doing in a studio when they're actively working. So setting up your space, collecting your materials and tool, ideation, working through the creative process of creating, then reflecting on it, and then what happens next. So those are all steps and things. And then a lot of TAB teachers also, we did a study recently, an informal study, Ellen Winner and Lois Hetland and I, we had surveyed a number of TAB teachers asking if they incorporate the studio habits of mind and studio thinking framework into their work. And I think it was like the high 80s, 80% said that they did incorporate it. And it's because it aligns so beautifully with what mm-hmm. we do in the studio. So using the studio habits of mind for assessment really helps. But it's also important to consider, I think, as a teacher, and you know, for me, it's August now, the school year is coming back up. And it's important to consider like authentic assessment, as well as like the typical summatives you have to do, you know, at the end of the quarter or the half year. But making authentic assessments for kids and having them have a say in it really helps as well, because it really gives meaning to what it is they're doing. And it shows them the importance of it too. And it makes all their work like relevant to what they're doing, so that then they can apply it. You know, we were talking about application of skill earlier. This is the same thing. Like, when can they apply these skills of the reflection and the thinking of what they're doing later on? So those are things I always think about. And I think that's mostly what I wanted to say, but I do think it's important to note that the national core art standards are very supportive of artistic process in their language. Oh, yeah. So you can, you can absolutely use those. A lot of the state frameworks go along with those, like they kind of like trickle down into the states. So, but they're both very in line with what we do as TAB educators. So just throwing that out there, if you were curious, well, how does this work with the thing? Like, it's very well suited. They're very well suited for each other. So,
well, I sorry, I just have to say, like, I had a total fangirl moment when you're like talking about and Lois Hetland. I'm like, oh, I'd love to meet them. Sorry.
Well, I should mention also, because Abby's dissertation is fabulous, but if you want kind of like a, I don't know how I would describe it, but like a very readable, approachable art education history, Ellen Winner's latest book, An Uneasy Guest in the Schoolhouse, excellent book. It has all the history of art education in the United States. It talks a little bit about other international programs as well, but it does focus on mostly the history of art education in the United States. And I bring it up because there are whole chapters in there talking about the progressive art education movement, and then all of the art education philosophies that have come out of that afterwards. So TAB is not like brand new on the scene. Right. I mean, this has started a long time ago. TAB is just putting it, I think, into a very practical, it's just putting it into a very practical application, like a way to approach it in our current state. So highly recommend that book by Ellen Winner, An Uneasy Guest in the Schoolhouse.
I'm buying it.
I feel like that we're just like scratching the surface on this whole conversation, and there may need to be a follow-up of some sort.
Well, I'm hoping that maybe we'll get to be on her podcast and follow up a little bit on that too.
You have to,
like, a crossover thing.
Yeah,
we can get our listeners to go to you guys and vice versa and the whole thing.
I mean, you know, we could probably just talk forever, and I'm sure it would not be a heavy lift of a conversation, but
and we could talk forever, but you should cut us off.
That's kind of where we're headed. So, you know, as we usually do at the end of our podcast, is we ask you just to kind of share any last bits of wisdom or some advice to that we maybe didn't cover or did cover, or just feel like adding on. So let's, you know, whoever would like to start with that.
Go ahead. Start, Abby. You just unmuted.
I know, my dogs escaped my house and then joined me in my car, so I'm glad
they did.
I love them. They're funny. So I think that the biggest thing is, I would say, have grace with yourself as you're exploring, like, wherever you're at in your journey as an art educator. If you are like wanting more choice, great. You know, there are ways of doing that in ways that aren't going to make you crazy. I would say that it is not as scary as people think it is to have students have more access to materials. Honestly, are you really going to need to hoard that in the back? Like, there's part of me that wants to save all the really good things in the back cabinet for, I don't know when. I took over from a teacher, and she had saved all of the really great speedball inks until the tubes rotted and the ink was no good. And so, I mean, at what point are you going to hoard to non-use?
Yes.
So, you know, and when are you going to just say, you know what, if a student needs it, it's time to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is okay. And when things run out, it is okay. They don't necessarily have to be replaced. And that is hard. And I'm just saying that at the beginning of the school year, because I know people are heading into that. It's hard to let, students fail.
Mm-hmm.
And there's risks of that. And it is okay, because that is also part of learning how to do this process. And sometimes, and I guess, just again, when a student fails, it is not a reflection on you as the teacher. I think that sometimes we have that connection, or we have administrators who try to make that connection. And I think we just need to embrace that that's part of the process of learning. So having grace and letting students really...
I'm laughing because I hear Abby. Oh. You have to understand, there's a dog under our desk licking my foot right now, and your dog just started licking your ear.
Dogs.
This is real life. Like, this is what real life people that podcast part time deal with.
Exactly. No, have a great school year, and trust the process, and take it slow, and find friends who do it, you know, or find friends to do it with, and start. You know, like, you know, if you're a slow walker, find some other slow walkers. Aspire to be a fast walker, definitely. But, you know, it is okay. You're headed in a direction. And at the end of the day, my goal is to have students that want to make art in their 60s when they're retired, and they want to take their kids to an art museum and not sound like an idiot. Yep. So that's, you know what? If that's what comes out of my classroom, then I've done my job.
Yeah. Love it. Jen?
I just wanted to share, first, thank you for inviting us on. This was wonderful. And I wanted just to mention to everybody that TAB is not something that is very like obscure anymore. It's out there. People know about it. People talk about it. People present on it. There's research on it. And there's people all over that would be willing to share their experiences with you. If you were interested in finding out more, you could reach out to local teachers. There are people all over the country and the world that are TAB practitioners. There will be some resources that are shared afterwards that you can mm-hmm. access. One of them is Mighty Networks, which is an online community of art educators that are looking to find out more about TAB and TAB practice. So, and there is a way in there if you were to join, it's free, but if you were to join, you can look for people in your area that you can either go observe, you can meet up and chat. Sometimes regional groups do professional development opportunities. So there's so many ways to access information now that is not just you being by yourself, like on a computer, like I was like, oh my God, I got to read all this stuff, like right now, like by myself. There are so many ways to connect with other people. And I'm glad that Abby brought that up because it is such an amazing network of people. Everyone is always very open and ready to share their wealth of knowledge. So I think that's mostly what I wanted to say. And just again, to thank you so much for having us. This was really a pleasure.
Awesome.
Well, we enjoyed it. And as Matt said, would love to reconnect. Again, there's a lot more to talk about, and it's a really, you know, I'm going to say I'm pro TAB, which I know, like, I don't want to be the camp that's like, I wanted to say like, there are many ways of teaching, but I do feel like if I were still in the classroom, that's where my heart would be, just because when you observe a teacher's classroom that's doing TAB, and it is one of the most amazing things to see. And it's
joyful.
What I was going to say. I was trying to look for the word because it is joyful. It really is. And because kids are truly invested in their own art and their own learning. So
if you're looking for a spark, like that was what did it for me. Maybe I should mention that. If you're trying to recapture the spark of why you started teaching, TAB helped me. I know it helped Abby. It helped us find that spark again. And it really is such a joyful thing to be able to share with your kids. So,
Well,
Abby and Jen, like I said, thank you so much for being on here. And we hope to talk with you again and hopefully sooner than later. So,
yeah,
thank you.
Oh, goodness.
That was a little bit of a longer convo that really could have just kept going. And I know we say that a lot, but there's just a lot to unpack around TAB. And I think as Abby and Jen said, there's some misconceptions around it. And I love that there was some background information shared. And I also loved their like transparency.
Well, you usually do. Most people.
I'm very into the.
I think that anytime you are having a conversation about something that's a little bit more controversial in a way, that, you know, having different perspectives, having to bring that around, because I know it definitely those books she was. You know, they both were referencing, and I hope are in the resource list, that, you know, I would definitely be interested in starting to read through.
Well, and I think it's, you know, I know we brought forth the question about, you know, the different, you know, feelings about TAB or not being TAB, or, you know, being more traditionally pedagogy based. But I just think what was shared was it doesn't matter, like whatever you need to do, you do, like, and whatever your best teaching philosophy and style that fits for your students, that's the most important thing. And I appreciated that Abby shared that, you know, like there's not a right and a wrong, but there's a, you learn and you do what works in your classroom for your students. And that if we keep students at the center of our choices as teachers, that's the most important thing.
Yep.
And I also just want to say that, you know, as you mentioned, there are resources, and that's one thing that I would lean into for any of the listeners that are interested in learning more or trying TAB is, you know, yes, get into a community, find other teachers, you know, connect with those people, but there are resources like Jen said, this is not a new thing any longer. There are so many resources. There are websites. The founders are still sharing materials, you know, and there are books on, there are videos, and there are just lots of resources and lots of people you can connect to and a lot of things you can learn before you just, you know, dive in it by yourself.
Yeah.
I really think the learning piece, you know,
and it's ever evolving. It's not just one thing set in stone and that's it.
Well, I think that that's one of the things that we love about education is that it's a practice, right? Mm-hmm. We talk about the practice of teaching, that the art of teaching, and that it is always changing. And that if you're a reflective educator, you're making decisions and then, you know, seeing, well, did that work? Did that not work? Reflecting on those decisions, reflecting on your choices as the instructor, and then refining that. It's mm-hmm. you know, that practice of teaching is what makes it interesting and fun. Mm-hmm. It would be really boring if it wasn't, you know, like there's a reason we go into this. We don't like it being the same every day. You know, that's just, I think, who educators are, is that we need it constantly evolving and changing and looking at new pedagogies is and philosophies and refining that for yourself is part of that process.
Hey, you know what? Earlier you were actually not earlier, just not too, like 2 minutes ago, you were starting to talk about,
I think 20 seconds ago, I was talking about resources.
You were talking about resources.
Your mind.
So where would people go to look for these resources?
Well, you know, I think we like to mention this a lot because they are good partners with us. But if you go to davisart.com, you will find resources, and you will find all of our podcasts and all of our resources connected to those podcasts. You just go to davisart.com/free resources, and there we are. And if you just Google K-12 Art Chat, mm-hmm. you can find it pretty quickly.
So let's say that you, I'm just going to ask you a question now, but let's say that you have an idea or you want to have some other people talk about maybe else.
Maybe you know some great people that maybe you know Ellen Winner and Lois Hetland, and you can put them in touch with us. And they, you know, you just want to connect them to us so that they can be on the podcast, which would be amazing. But you would send us an email at thecreativitydept@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on social media. The truth of the matter is we're doing a less Twitter these days.
We are.
I think we're still there,
but
we're not, you know, it's a little less. So Instagram, Facebook, those places.
Instagram's a good one.
Email. We love to connect. So just make sure to reach out. And then if they want to support the podcast, how can they do that?
Well, as always, listening to it's good. You know, finding them on any of the platforms like Spotify and Apple, and liking and reviewing and sharing it and all the things.
Subscribing.
Yes.
All of those things. So as always, thanks for listening to K-12 Art Chat, and we wish you a creative week.